Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The film Temple Grandin, it's a true story of a woman with autism who became one of the leading scientists in humane livestock handling. Last Sunday, in what might appear as one fell swoop, it garnered 5 Emmy Awards, including Outstanding Made-for-TV Movie. But producer Emily Gerson-Sains worked 10 years to make this happen. Coming up later, Temple Grandin herself, Temple's mother, Eustacia Cutler. But joining us now, Emily Gerson-Sains, the producer of Temple Grandin. Welcome to the show, Emily.
Thank you for having me.
And congratulations on your great success.
Oh, thank you.
Let's hear from Temple Grandin when she speaks to the media at the Emmy Awards and says she hopes the film will increase awareness and understanding of autism.
It's really wonderful to be here tonight, and I hope this movie is going to educate a lot of people about autism, because there's still a lot of people that don't understand autism. And autism varies from somebody might be a Silicon Valley genius to somebody that is very handicapped and nonverbal. It's a very, very big spectrum. And the movie very accurately showed sensory sensitivity problems, showed how visual thinking, and it also showed anxiety problems. And Claire Danes just became me back in the 60s and the 70s.
And Emily Gerson-Sains, this probably wouldn't have happened without you, but the story is very personal for you. That's maybe why you persevered so long?
My 16-year-old son has autism, and Temple's story was incredibly inspiring to me. When he was first diagnosed, it felt like a very hopeless time. And, you know, you're dealing with, you know, so many things. The doctors are basically telling you your life is not going to be as planned. And, you know, they just keep laying on you. Well, he may never talk. Well, you know, he may never be able to read or write or do so very many things. And there was just no relief. And finally, my mother and my grandmother gave me this book, Thinking in Pictures, and it really changed my life. It gave me a source of hope, you know, for a future of possibility for him. So I just felt that there are so many people that needed that inspiration, that it would make sense for it to become a film. And I have tremendous access because I'm in the entertainment business, mm-hmm. and in the case of HBO, I've worked very, very closely with them for many, many years. So it was, you know, it was a really easy thing to suggest to them, we should make this into a film, and without pausing, they said yes.
Why HBO? Why not the theaters like A Beautiful Mind, which incorporated a lot of the same sort of visualizations? Why HBO?
For a couple reasons. I mean, even 10 years ago, stories that starred women mm-hmm. were more difficult in terms of getting them to reach a wide audience. But fortunately for us, 10 years later, we made the right decision because by putting it on HBO, more people were going to see it. It's sort of a sad state of affairs, what's going on in the movie world, that a movie that has any kind of meaning, it's very difficult to get them pushed through. They're few and far between. And, you know, mostly about superheroes or horror movies mm-hmm. or a comedy, but a film about a woman with autism who designs slaughterhouses is probably not going to break any box office records.
And yet it's such a perfect example of the truth is stranger than fiction.
Yeah.
You know, I can't remember. I've read so much in the last 48 hours about Temple Grandin. Of course, I had heard it for many times before. But someone said if you couldn't make it up.
No.
You couldn't make up the story. So when you first heard Temple Grandin's story, did you almost think they must be pulling my leg a little bit? It can't be this. It can't be what they say it is.
No, because I believe in, you know, I believe in people in general. Mm-hmm. And I think that so many people have a unique story to tell. But what, you know, was just so inspiring is that she had autism. And clearly I was reading it, so I knew it was possible, mm-hmm. Which really was the part that was inspiring. So, you know, I didn't doubt that it was true. I really went with it and you know, felt it should be shared.
My guest is Emily Gerson-Sange. She's the executive producer of the multiple Emmy Award-winning Temple Grandin. It's the true story of the woman with autism who became one of the leading scientists in humane livestock handling. Last Sunday, 5 Emmy Awards, including Outstanding Made-for-TV Movie. It aired on HBO. The movie uses a lot of the extra visuals, as I mentioned earlier, to show what's going on in Temple's mind, and I absolutely loved that. How involved was she in the process of depicting all of those?
Well, you know, in terms of how that was realized, that, you know, we worked very closely on our script from an HBO perspective, with our producers, but, you know, it was written. Those were Chris Monger's ideas, our screenwriter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right in the script was the moment where the shoes are changing,
mm-hmm.
As she's trying to visualize a pair of shoes. And then our director came in and layered it with other forms of this visualization. And so I feel as if, you know, from a conceptual standpoint, it's what we were looking for, you know, and what we had suggested to our writers. We didn't want to tell it in a typical fashion. That was never our intention. And then we had a writer who could deliver on that and mm-hmm. a director who could further deliver on that. In terms of Temple, where I talked to her was mostly in terms of the accuracies. My favorite thing was when I was first telling Temple, you know, we're working on the script, the thing she said to me was, no computers, there can't be computers, this is the 70s. And I said, I assured her there would be no computers in the movie.
No wonder I felt so at home watching it.
But, you know, in terms of the visualization of it, she really trusted us, you know, to tell the story in the manner that we felt fit. When we finally brought her to the set, the next level of accuracies was she went immediately to the livestock handling facilities, and she wanted to make sure that the chutes were opening properly and that, you know, the animals would not be injured in the filming of this film. So, you know, her involvement was really much more so with technical issues, and they more so came at a later date.
In this scene from the HBO movie, Temple finds her horse Chestnut dead in the barn, and she speaks with her science teacher, Professor Carlock, about it, and it mentions those shoes.
Temple, when animals and people die, they stay with us in our minds. We can still see them. So I think it would be best not to remember Chestnut like this. Okay?
I see Chestnut the day I arrived. I see grooming Chestnut. I see a picture of a horse just like Chestnut in a book. You pass a Chestnut horse in Route 119 near a feed store. There was one in a calendar at Ann Ann's. There was one in Life magazine opposite the page of Mr. Kennedy.
Okay, okay. Can you bring everything you've seen to your mind?
Sure.
Even if it were an everyday object like, say, shoes?
I see all the shoes I've worn, and then mother's, and other people I've met, and you have 3 pairs. One needs a new heel. And there's shoes in newspaper ads and TV ads. And...
Wow.
Can't you?
I love that. Mm-hmm. Can't you? You know, there was some, it's interesting in the film, there were moments of humor like that. And then there were other moments where she would have the same sort of reaction to people, but it wasn't funny. It was maybe when people were laughing at her.
Well, I think what we wanted to do, it was a big note that I had from the outset,
mm-hmm.
and in fact it had a lot to do with why we actually chose Chris Monger, because it was important to me that there be humor in this script. My son is a person, and what I tried to bring to this script was, to the project, was the truth of what I knew the experience of autism was. In a very personal kind of way. And one of the things I said is, you know, my son's a person. Sometimes we laugh with him, sometimes we laugh at him. And that's human nature. And that doesn't change just because someone has autism. And, you know, there are things that they do that are just adorable,
mm-hmm.
because they see life in a very honest way. You know, when we were at the Emmys the other night, Temple stood up and she waved to the audience. Now, when other people have been thanked, they didn't do that. Temple did it because it was a very honest moment. And she didn't know not to do it, and she knew people were there to celebrate her, and she stood up. And what I think that allowed the audience to do was it allowed them to actually be inside our movie. They were going through the experience of what it is like to share something with someone with autism. And, you know, interestingly that you just played that particular audio clip, because the evening before, I brought Temple to the set for the first time. I realized she was going to be going to the set and she was going to be seeing Claire Danes play herself.
Mm-hmm.
And it occurred to me, she and I were having dinner, and it occurred to me that that might be a little overwhelming. And as a producer, I had to also recognize that we were in the middle of a shooting day. So I wasn't going to be able to shut down the shooting day or slow down the shooting day because there was a lot of money involved. And at the same time, I was going to want to be sensitive to Temple's needs under those circumstances. So what I thought to do was bring her up to my room, call dinner, call, you know, not have dessert, bring her up to my room, and show her dailies from the film.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, in the scene with Chestnut and David Strathairn and Claire Danes, she started crying in my room. And, you know, that is not an emotion that comes very easily to Temple.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Temple, you know, why are you crying? Is it because the horse is dead in that scene? And she said, you know, that was sad, but that it reminded her of Carlock, and mm-hmm. that, you know, she hadn't thought about him in a long time and how important he was to her. And it was really, of this whole experience, it was probably the most meaningful moment that I had, because it was just so honest.
Mm-hmm. It was, you know, it wasn't somebody just putting on. I mean, because what you see is what you get with someone like Temple.
And you can't assume. You can't assume what it is that they're seeing, because they're seeing the world in a very different way, a very honest way. But, you know, it's a person with autism oftentimes has sensory overload because things are coming at them very evenly. So the thing that they're going to focus on ultimately may not be the thing that we focus on.
Mm-hmm.
And something that we do in the movie where the horse's eyes are looking in one direction, it looks like they're looking in a certain direction, but their ears are in a different direction.
Yeah, that was incredible.
And I think it's very similar for a person with autism. You know,
yeah.
Their eye contact is terrible, but can be terrible, not always. You know, we have to be very careful when we talk about autism also, because
sure.
It's a very wide spectrum.
Right.
And whereas my son sort of falls on the middle part of the spectrum, Temple is very high functioning. And, you know, there's what winds up happening if you're not careful when you talk about autism is there's a polarization. And we have to make sure that we really honor the creative minds of people with, you know, high-functioning autism. There have been, you know, so many scientists and artists that have really changed society. And yet there's also another part of the population that whose needs are not being met.
Right.
And, you know, so it was one of those struggles also that we had in making this film. So what I strongly encouraged us to do and tried to make sure it happened was that in the earlier part of the film, there's a universal truth of things that we deal with, most of which made it into the film, some of which didn't because of time constraints and sort of the way things would flow. And then, you know, the second part of the movie was, after her mentors had all worked with her, the great achievement she was able to go on to have. And I feel and hope that our film, you know, paid tribute to to all the needs and the vast spectrum of people with autism.
I think, you know, there's a lots more I'd love to talk with you about, and we need to take a break. But the fact that it's not a static existence, it changes.
Mm-hmm.
It evolves.
Yeah.
You're not stuck in any one place. You can grow.
You can grow, and there's also different challenges that come with different stages of life.
Right. Emily Gerson-Sains, executive producer of Temple Grandin. It's the multiple Emmy Award-winning story of the woman with autism who became one of the leading scientists in humane livestock handling. Emily, thanks for joining us today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. Coming up, Temple Grandin. She'll be with us in just a few minutes. Hang on. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On Talk of the Nation, we like to be clear about what we're talking about, whether it's movies.
A B-movie was a movie that was made specifically to be on the bottom half of a double feature.
Or the auto industry.
One mid-level executive at a top automaker told me, well, 30 years ago, we were a car company that would occasionally lend money to our customers, and now we're a bank that makes cars.
Talk of the Nation. Clear, straight, open. From NPR News.
And Talk of the Nation will be here from 2 until 4, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. It's 83 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:22 this morning. Sunny skies today, and another hot one, a high of 91. Clouds tonight, a low of 68 degrees. There is a good chance of rain for Friday. Cloudy skies and a high of 80. Looking ahead to the weekend, sunny skies on Saturday and cooler with a high of 72. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining us now, Temple Grandin, the subject of the movie Temple Grandin, multiple Emmy award-winning movie on HBO. Welcome to the show, Temple.
It's great to be here. I'm in a car out in Texas in the country. I just hope I don't lose the signal, but I had to get back doing my real job. Training auditors to do animal welfare audits.
What's an animal welfare audit?
Well, we got to make sure they handle chickens right and they handle cattle right and pigs right at the slaughter plant. I've worked on years on this, and doing an auditor training the people that do the audits to make sure that the animals are transported and handled correctly. We're just going out to farm right now to watch them load chickens. I've lost chickens. And we're going on to some freeway now, so maybe they'll help us not have a lost signal.
Okay.
But I've had to get back. I'm doing my real job.
It's been a pretty exciting week. Congratulations.
Oh, it was really exciting. I mean, it was just suspense. I remember when Julie Ormond got announced, I was just jumping up and down cheering because she was the first Emmy the movie got.
Yeah, she plays your mother in the film, right?
Yeah, she was mother in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got up there on the stage, and I just had to yell out to mother, stand up, and she did.
She's going to be on in a few minutes. If you do cut out, fear not, we'll have your mother, Eustacia Cutler, on as well. Thank you so much for joining us. You know, you told one interviewer at the Emmys that the geek side of you liked that they showed all of your projects in the movie, and I have to say, I loved seeing all of your cool projects.
I loved it, too. They actually recreated the dip vat off the original drawings. There's a scene in the conference room with the people standing around. That drawing on that table, I Xeroxed it down at Kinko's for the use in the movie.
Just right down to where you built the pull opener for the gate at your aunt's ranch in Arizona.
Yep, that was done off of original photos. In fact, I had to draw a sketch out from Mick Jackson on how to make the opener mechanism work and then how I was flipping that vent. It was from the vent I got the idea of how to hook the cable up to the gate to make it work.
Now, when you went back and did all the technical consulting for the film, did you want to kind of improve some of the stuff you did, like you had new ideas and thought, crap, if I could do it over again?
No, it just did it just exactly the way it was in the 60s and the 70s. And dip vats aren't used anymore. They're kind of an obsolete technology, but with the curved cattle handlers, we're still building them. Mark was my design assistant now, was out at a feed yard yesterday, going to lay out a loading ramp and some cattle handling facilities for big feed guards.
You know, how would you know, particularly when you were younger in high school, how would you know when something needed fixing? No one asked you to do it. It was just something you would see. How would you know that you could improve something in the world around you?
Well, the first thing I did when I went out to Arizona is I'd get down in the chutes and see what the cattle were seeing. They'd bark at shadows. They'd bark at a reflection. They'd bark at a truck going by. You know, nobody had even bothered to look at that stuff before. Then I went to a whole bunch of feed yards in Arizona and Texas and actually made drawings of their facilities. And then I studied, like, which part of the facility worked really well, which part of the facility didn't work really well. And I took all the good bits and put them all together into new designs.
You know, the movie chronicles your life mostly starting at high school, but you told one interviewer, I think it was with Pennsylvania Public Media, that your early childhood education was critical to your later success. How were you taught as a child?
Well, fortunately, a mother had a good went to see a doctor named Bronson Crothers at Boston Children's that was a neurologist that then referred her to a little nursery school that two teachers taught out of their house that were just as good as any teacher today. I had excellent early intervention, and that bad doctor that's in the movie, he's sort of a composite of a whole bunch of bad forces that wanted to put me in institution. Mm-hmm. There were plenty of people that wanted to do that. But fortunately, Mother got this very good early advice from Bronson Crothers, and the therapy seemed to be working. She could see advancement, and then she did everything she could to make sure I didn't go to an institution. And we thought the best thing, you know, to tell my story would be to have the movie showing my teenage life and getting my business started. And the movie did a great job of showing all the discrimination. That scene with the bull testicles, that happened.
Ugh. That is so sad. We don't have that. And yeah, go ahead.
I had that and the scene where the cattle drowned. That also happened.
Let's listen to something right now. The movie shows your role in the cattle industry, and in this clip, Claire Danes, the actress who portrays you in the film, and the film's director Mick Jackson explain your role. Let's listen to that.
She ended up working in the cattle industry, creating systems for cattle to move calmly. Temple realized there was a more humane way to encourage cattle.
Her ethos was, I love animals so much. I want every moment of their lives will be calm. And what we've done in the movie is convey how she was able to see that in her head before she constructed it.
You know, Temple, as you mentioned earlier, the cattle industry at first wasn't so welcoming to you and your ideas. And now they mostly embrace you warmly. I mean, that you're like the flag, you know, out there that they wave all the time. Was there a point when you thought, forget it, I'm going to turn my intellect in another direction because they don't appreciate what I'm trying to do?
What kept me going is there were a few really good people in the cattle industry that appreciated what I did. There was Dylan Penny Porter singing Valley Ranch. There was Ted Gilbert at the Red River Feed Yard. There was Gary Oden up at the McElhaney Feed Yard. There were some very, very good people that did appreciate what I did, and that's what kept me going. If I hadn't had those few really good people, then I probably might have gone off and done something else.
614-292-8513 if you would like to speak with Temple Grandin. And Jerome, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Professor Grandin, I only wanted to ask you a question. I must confess, I haven't read your book. I have learning disabilities, and autism runs in the family. So what you say sounds intuitively correct to me, but I'm wondering how you can prove you know what animals experience and see and feel at a scholarly level. I mean, it's an epistemological question.
Well, I think in pictures, the movie did a great job of showing that. I've studied a lot of neuroscience, and if you look at how the brain is set up in both people and animals, an animal doesn't have verbal language, so he has to store his memories as pictures, as sounds, as touch sensations. And the parts of the brain where those sensory-based files are stored, they know where scientists know where that is. There's no other way an animal could think except sensory-based, because there's no verbal language. And animals will often get afraid of something they've seen. Like, I knew a horse that was scared of death of black cowboy hats, been abused by a guy with black cowboy hats, white hats. He was just fine with.
Mm-hmm. Related question.
Okay.
I know you're familiar with Erlen syndrome, and I have Erlen syndrome, and I'm a Erlen screener. My understanding is that sensory input was taken out of the revision of the diagnostic statistical manual by the psychologists, but now the cognitive scientists are pushing to have it included in the revision for DSM-5. Any thoughts about that?
Well, the sensory processing problems go across a lot of disorders, problems with sound sensitivity, touch sensitivity, Irwin syndrome, visual sensitivity. A lot of people with bad Irwin syndrome tend to be auditory thinkers.
Jerome, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Take
Bye.
Care. Bye-bye. Ooh, got some static there. 614-292-8513. We have a few more minutes left with Temple Grandin. Temple, it's well known that you think actress Claire Danes did a wonderful job depicting you in the movie. She won an Emmy for her role. What was the clincher for you in that? What did she nail about you and your persona, in your opinion?
A voice and mannerisms. She just became me. She went way beyond, you know, just learning the lines. And I spent 4 hours with her. She videotaped that. I gave her all these old, ancient VHS tapes. And she played and played and played them on her iPod. She worked as a speech coach and a movement coach. She's a very serious actor. She became me. It was just amazing. And they put her blonde hair up under a wig, and she just became me.
When you talked with her for 4 hours, what did you talk about?
Everything. We talked about autism. I talked a lot about the sensory issues. And we talked about just livestock and just a whole lot of different things.
You know, for me, the relationship with your mother in the movie is critical. I'm sure it is, you know, it's critical in your whole story. And the last scene in the movie where you're at that autism conference and you sort of get up and start speaking, it seemed like that was the first time in your story that your mother realized that you realized everything she had done.
Well, that scene, the way that I get up and talk, that actually happened. Let me tell you exactly what actually happened.
Okay.
It was when I did Emergence, I was invited to be just a one round table. You know, they had these round table discussions where each table is just like 6 or 7 people at a table. And I was just one of the round tables. Mm-hmm. And what ended up happening is the whole room got up and listened to me. That part happened. Unfortunately, Mother was not at that meeting. But where all the people got up and listened to me, that actually happened. I probably had about, you know, probably had 80 to 100 people listening.
But in that speech that you gave, when you're talking in that group, the point is made, you're making the point very clearly that you understand everything your mother did to help you.
Absolutely, I understand.
Yeah, but did she know that you understood? I guess that was that something that she might not have been aware of herself, that you understood that?
Well, they're getting into some abstraction. I don't think I can answer.
Okay. 614-292-8513. And Fatih, you're on the air. You have a child with autism. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello. You're on the air.
Hi. Hello.
Yes, you're on the air with Temple Grandin.
Okay. Hi, Temple. It's Fatih Fuchs. You and I met in Ohio a couple years ago, and I have a daughter that is 9 years old, and I'm just wondering what would be a good time, or is there a good time to explain to the child that she has autism?
I think it depends on the level of functioning. With the fully verbal kids, you know, probably around third or fourth grade, there's some very nice books you can get to. That one of the ones I really love is a book called Little Rain Man that really explains visual thinking if you think your child might be a visual thinker. Besides, not everybody with autism is a visual thinker. Some are auditory thinkers, some are word thinkers, and some are pattern or mathematical thinkers. But they tend to be good at one thing and bad at something else. Develop your daughter's strength. Mother did all kinds of things. Develop my ability in art. That was really encouraged.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay.
You're doing a wonderful job. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. 614-292-8513. And Jim, you're on the air. What's your, you say that autism is an umbrella term. You're absolutely right.
It is an umbrella term. And my son has Asperger's syndrome. I'm going to pull off the road and
thank you.
My son has Asperger's syndrome, and he's actually part of a group down at Ohio State called Aspirations. And which is a group for people with autism, young people with autism.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great organization. But the people that are there, the kids with autism, are as different as any group of people can possibly be. And it seems that it's underappreciated that that people try to put autism in a bucket.
Yeah.
And they don't go in one bucket. And I'd like to have someone, with Temple's experience and all, make some comment about just how different these kids are.
All righty, Jim. We're going to take you off the air, though, because you're cutting up real badly. But thanks for your call. Temple, did you catch that?
I only heard about half of that, something about people with autism being different. That's definitely true. You know, I'm a visual thinker. Others are a thinker. You know, the visual thinkers, they'll draw really early, develop the strengths. Take your child's fixations. If he likes trains, let's do reading with trains, math with trains. Use those fixations to motivate. And I love the way the movie showed my science, and because he motivated me to study. I was a goofball student that wasn't interested in studying.
You had a lot of mentors, or a few key mentors. Your aunt was very important to your life.
She was really important to me. And if I hadn't gone out to the ranch, I would have never seen cattle in the squeeze chute. I wouldn't have gotten the cattle industry. And at first, I was afraid to go to the ranch. And Mother said, you have a choice. You can go out there just for a short time or stay the whole summer, but you're going to go. Mother recognized that she needed to get me out doing all kinds of different things. I shouldn't be just sitting in my room. You got to push these kids some.
Well, it's interesting she made that leap from people recommending that you be institutionalized to pushing you away, knowing you needed that exposure.
She was always pushing me. When I was 13, she got me a little sewing job a couple of afternoons a week in the summer, hand sewing dresses for a lady who did dresses. She worked to get me internships when I was in college. I'm seeing too many of these smart Asperger type of kids graduating from college. They have never done any work experience. It's absolutely ridiculous. You know, when I was in high school goofing around, I was doing a lot of work. I took care of 9 horses. I built lots of things. I was actually getting good work skills.
One of the founders of a local nonprofit organization that's being formed to provide meaningful employment training for adults with autism. And we're going to have a whole show on that probably sometime in October. So we'll be talking about that again. Temple Grandin, I want to say thank you now for joining us today. I appreciate it. I know you're very, very busy.
Well, thank you for having me. And we were lucky and the signal didn't give out. And we're almost out at the chicken farm to watch them load some chicken trucks. And I guess the people that run the cell phone towers, they were on our side.
Okay, lucky chickens, too. Thanks again, Temple. Take care.
All right. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Yeah,
when we return, we will meet Temple Grandin's mother, Eustacia Cutler. She is depicted in the movie by Julia Orman. When you return, she'll be with us. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear conversations that you won't hear anywhere else.
Do you understand love?
Well, I understand caring. See, most of my relationships are more intellect, and to me, love is caring.
Posing questions to fascinating people like Temple Grandin and giving them the time to answer on Fresh Air.
And this is WOSU 820 NPR News. Fresh Air will be here in 20 minutes. It starts at noon. And at WOSU, listener feedback is very important. Your thoughts on the conversations we've been having across the radio and web matter a lot to us. We're creating an online audience advisory panel, and we're looking for at least 1,000 listeners who can help out. If you have a moment, just go to WOSU.org/survey, and you can sign up and send us your thoughts. That's WOSU.org/survey. And thank you for your support of WOSU. And it's 85 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:40 this morning. Sunny skies today and a hot day with a high of 91. A slight chance of rain tonight, but only a 20% chance. Cloudy skies, a low of 68 degrees. There's a good chance of rain for Friday and Mostly cloudy skies, a high of 80 for Friday. Partly cloudy Friday night, a low of 53. And sunny for Saturday, a high of 72. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We are talking about the film Temple Grandin. It is the true story of the woman with autism who became one of the leading scientists in humane livestock handling. We were just talking with Temple Grandin. She was on her way to a chicken ranch in Texas to educate auditors on how to audit the chicken ranch for safety. Joining us now is her mother, Eustacia Cutler. She is the author of A Thorn in My Pocket, and it's the story of raising Temple in the conservative world of the 1950s. Eustacia is depicted in the Emmy Award-winning film Temple Grandin by actress Julia Ormond, who won an Emmy for the role. Welcome to the show, Eustacia.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
I wanted to hear just a short bite from the film right now. It's you're being played by Julia Ormond in the film. Let's hear a scene where you learn of Temple's diagnosis.
No speech yet at the age of...
Four.
Your child is clearly autistic.
What's the next step for...
We generally recommend an institution.
Her mother keeps pushing her somewhat to meet those challenges and to go out into the world in order that she will function as best that she can.
Well, let me comment about that. I don't think it was a fair judgment of the doctors that I had. I had wonderful doctors, and you have to remember that in Boston, they're not Freudians. New Englanders are wary of Freud. We don't lie down on couches and tell people our troubles. So this doctor, and Temple mentioned his name, and now will again Bronson Crothers, and I wish he were alive to thank him today because I didn't realize what a gift he'd given me. But he was looking at her neurology, and that put him 15 years ahead of everybody. And it was, yeah, Temple's right, he was he who recommended the speech school. She, too, was way ahead. This is, we're lucky today if we have teachers who are as adept as Mrs. Reynolds was, and I wish I could thank her. You know, teaching is an art. It's not a science. It's a question of intuition. And this is very important in teaching. And therefore, yes, my thanks go to all teachers working in this area.
Temple's with us still. Temple, glad you could stay with us.
I'll stay with you as long as I have a signal.
Okay. There was a point at the flashback in the film where you go back and you're with that doctor who's telling you that the best idea is to institutionalize Temple. Temple is nonverbal at that point. She's almost 4 years old. Where in your odyssey, Eustacia, did the light switch go on and you went, oh, no, really, we can change something. We can make a difference here.
I think ordinarily we don't have a big light switch,
okay.
Light switch moment of sort of an aha moment.
Uh-huh.
I think it creeps over slowly. But I did. I remember a night of such fierce weeping, I thought I would strangle on my own tears. And I woke up the next day, and I promised myself that never again will I cry that hard. It's stopping me from thinking. I will think. I will work this out step by step. And I will trust. I will look to the people I trust. And I would say that to any mother today. You're going to have to go on your own instinct, your own reaction to a person. We are social creatures, and we need each other for our sense of self and our sense of direction in life. And that morning, after that weeping, I did make that resolution. I'm going to go with the people I trust.
It was in sometime in the early 80s, I think, when that last scene in the movie took place.
I'm getting a double voice in here, so I couldn't hear that question.
Okay, can you hear me now?
There's another radio intervening.
We don't know. You sound great to me. Temple, are you hearing okay?
Yeah, I can hear fine. Everything's fine.
Okay.
Okay, now it's gone.
Is it gone? Okay.
Yeah, okay. What was it you asked?
In that last scene in the movie where Temple's, you and Temple, I know that you're not really there. Temple explained to us that was a little bit of a composite scene. But she's talking to the group at the autism conference.
Yes, I heard her say that. Yes, I think it began to come to my realization that she realized what had been done for her. And I think, you see, here's where it's an interesting point to make about denial. People always laugh about denial and think that, oh, it's avoiding the subject. I don't think so. I think that I meet many mothers who are in a state of denial because they haven't yet developed the strength of mind to handle whatever it is that's deeply distressing to them. And somehow that veil, after you have a certain strength, that veil lifts and the denial goes away. And I would say that to all mothers. There is a moment where you have to, where you will be able to look at what you're looking at.
614-292-8513. Bobby, you're on the air. It might be kind of staticky, though, so let's do our best.
That's okay. I just wanted to ask a question. I work with children on the autism spectrum, primarily higher.
You're not coming through to me clearly.
Okay, you know what, Eustacia, I'll translate for you after she asks her question if you can't hear it.
Okay, yes, because the static keeps jumping in.
Right.
Thank you. Typically, higher functioning kids don't get put in resource in the classroom, and
you know what, Bobby, we're losing you, too. We can't get you. We can't hear you. Okay.
Okay.
Sorry.
What?
We just lost her, Eustacia. How about Kelly? You're on the air.
Static. I can't make out.
Hi,
I can
Eustacia.
Barely make out.
Hi, Temple.
Yeah.
Hey, I just want to tell you, ladies, I think you're wonderful. You're both opening so many doors on so many fronts. One of the scenes from the movie I love, Eustacia, is when you were sitting with the doctor, and he said he wanted to speak to your husband, and you said, "I have a degree from Harvard. Why don't you try me?" I just loved that. Temple, all the work that you did to gain acceptance with the cattlemen in an industry where women don't traditionally work, I'm just so proud of both of you for pushing all these boundaries and helping people learn new ways of looking at autism and animal compassion and accepting women into different areas. It's just amazing. You're wonderful women. I'm so proud.
Well, thank you. And I think sometimes now, today, we're going to have to help the dads. For some reason, women, it's probably the mirror neurons, it comes more easily to us to shift gears, change, understand, have insight. And I think many men, many fathers are confused and in need of our sympathy and need to have things explained to them more carefully than we're doing thus far. This is why I feel that we must now take the next step, that autism is basically a family disorder. It is a neurological disorder that produces social disorder, first of all, in the family. So let's address the needs of everybody in that family. And that includes the dads.
Were you as amazed, I mean, from an outside observer, how amazing it was to find that Temple was going to be such an important spokesperson for people with autism?
No, I had no idea. I have four children, and they're all wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And my feeling is that as a mother, what you want to do is set your children free. And that's what I tried to do. I had no goal in sight. I did try to offer her. I think what you have to do, particularly with children who have autism, you have to offer them a menu of opportunities. Come on, let's try this. You know, I know you like vanilla ice cream, but hey, just take a little taste of strawberry. You'll find it's pretty good. No, I don't want to. Okay, do you want to lick my strawberry ice cream cone? Oh, well, that is kind of good. Okay, now let's try strawberry. It's a little bit like that.
You know, so many parents today have a hard time letting go of their kids and under the best of circumstances, and you had to be panic-stricken when, for instance...
I'm having trouble with static.
You're still having trouble with static. Boy, we're just...
Can you interpret for me?
I can hear just absolutely fine. About
now
the
static's gone, but for some reason...
Letting the children go. I've talked to a lot of parents about that, and I had dinner with a couple of parents, and they admitted that they were doing too much for their kid and not, you know, getting him to put his shoes on by himself, even though it takes longer.
Yes, I think it's true with all children.
Yeah, it is. But
it's terribly important because otherwise you induce a kind of passivity. You're basically what you're saying to the child is, okay, you do it this way and I'll praise you. And you're saying, no, 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 we have to set them free.
And find their own way.
And find their own way and guide them. So say, offer different opportunities, advise them, get them to the point where they trust the way you will advise them.
How did you know to do that, though, Eustacia?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't know in the beginning. I sometimes look back at the little girl I was, because I was 20 when Temple was born, and I didn't know anything. I think it's on-the-job training. I wish it were otherwise, but it isn't.
Just like the rest of us, huh?
That's just like the rest of us. We're going to have to do it, but what amazes me is we do it. And the next generation gets raised.
What did you think of the movie? What do you think of the movie?
I felt it was a big advance for the cause of autism. I think it makes people aware when they're seeing somebody who's either has autism or is Asperger. One of the big problems has been when they're out in the big wide world in Walmarts or at the movie theater and their behavior is odd to other people. It makes those other people nervous, and then they become odd to the one who has autism. I thought if we could just understand each other a little clearer, then we can. Then all of our nervous systems will quiet down.
And I want to just chime in.
Sure.
Half the people in Silicon Valley probably have some autism, and they're all used to each other. They're all like geeks and nerds, just like the guy in Big Bang Theory that won the award.
Right.
Well, I've spoken in Silicon Valley. And I don't know, they seem to me like pretty straight folks. And I always love Temple's question to Ami Klim, who's a big authority on teenagers with Asperger. She asked him, did he think that Bill Gates had Asperger? To which Ami Klim said, Temple, we declare Asperger in terms of those who need our help. I don't think Bill Gates needs our help.
You know, Temple, the first time I ever heard an interview with you, I didn't know anything about the autism. I was just listening to an interview with you about your work with the cattle industry.
Well, that's where most people, you know, first, you know, learned about me.
It wasn't, you know.
Well, you know, back in the 70s, I wasn't telling anybody about autism. And the way I got my work going was I sold my work. I showed people pictures of my my drawings. I showed them pictures of jobs. I sold my work, not myself. And then they looked at my work and they go, oh, she really can, you know, do stuff.
But they would also ask you, how do you know this? And you would say, well, it's because I'm autistic.
No, I never told, in the 70s, I never actually told clients that. I was
Temple, my darling, let's not discount talent. How did you know? Because you're talented.
Mm-hmm.
It's
well,
not. There's a thing. It's beyond autism.
Mm-hmm.
I would just explain to them, you know, why it would work. You know, and then you get one system in. People see how it works. There's a scene in the movie where the guy from the magazine says it's a masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
That actually happened. That scene happened. And then we got the metal plate, put that out of there, and fixed it. People came from all over the country and looked at that defect. And then I did a whole bunch more of them after that.
Yeah, that wasn't clear in the movie to me. I was worried that maybe that was like the dead end for that, because they messed with it. The cattle died, and it wasn't clear to me that somebody went back and fixed it later.
Oh, it was fixed later. It was fixed later. Everything was fine, and people were coming in from all over the country to look at that dip vest.
My recollection is when you were standing around when you were designing. I guess it was for the next company that you worked with in Arizona, that you did stand around a table and they asked you, how do you know this? How can you tell that this is what the cattle need?
Well, I would give them a lot of reasons. Also, I did a lot of economic reasons. I would tell them, I can take a man out.
Oh, yeah.
I can reduce your workman's comp. Right now, you're getting 2 bad accidents a year on the system you got now. We're going to eliminate, we're going to cut down on those workman's comp claims. I used all of those kind of arguments
right.
to sell it.
Yeah, they're businessmen. Eustacia, when Temple was building her business like this, did you really know what was going on? Did you talk a lot and stay in contact?
Well, we talked, but I don't think I connected to it fully. I had no way to connect to it. It wasn't a world that I knew. But I repeat, I knew Temple was talented, and that talent, there's no explanation for it. It's there. It's like people who know how to draw. You can't learn how to draw. You can guide somebody who can draw into drawing better. But it's there. It's a talent, as music is a talent. And I knew Temple was talented. So I listened, and I, though it wasn't my world, I thought, it's okay. She's going to do a great job.
You know, there's a lot of humor in this story. Did it feel that way at the time, or was that something you look back and reflect upon and see it?
I reflect upon it, and you know, the Bull Festival thing happened. The scene where I went down to the farmer ranchman and asked for the job, that happened. Mm-hmm. So the work stuff in the movie was pretty accurate.
Eustacia?
Yes?
When it came to Temple's personality and the, I don't know, I guess for lack of a better word, just the sweetness of it when she was in a high school, you know, age and would say things that were just so honest and...
Well, yes, and I think adolescence is very hard for all children.
Right.
Suddenly Mother Nature says, okay, I'm going to give you a new body, new set of impulses, new set of friends, a new set of clothes. So everything you've learned up till now, you have to throw it away and start again. That's hard on all children.
Temple, your friend in college that you ended up having as a roommate in college, are you still friends?
Yes, I lost contact with her, and then when the movie came out, I regained contact, and I did have a blind roommate. Actually, she was in graduate school, and they have to do a little time compression in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
She was very accurately depicted in the movie, and she was one of my best friends. I had her for roommate for 2 years.
A lot of amazing, wonderful things like that, the mentors you had, how lucky to have the doctor. You're right. I mean, Eustacia, you're right. It's a lot of it's talent. There's no question about it. But
yeah.
The people that came into her life, I mean, so many blessings.
No, like Carlock was so, he was very critical in my success because
mm-hmm.
he gave me the goal of becoming a scientist. You know, now I had a reason to study. I wanted to become a scientist.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you both for joining us today. Eustacia, I'm sorry about all the static, and I hope you could understand.
Well, yes, most of it, and it's been a treat to talk to you.
Thank you so much. Where are you joining us from, the East Coast still?
I'm coming from New York City.
Okay. Well, thanks again, Eustacia Cutler. She's the mother of Temple Grandin and author of A Thorn in My Pocket. It's the story of raising Temple. And through the 1950s, she's depicted in the Emmy Award-winning film Temple Grandin by actress Julia Ormond. Thanks again, Eustacia. And Temple Grandin, thanks for staying with us for the whole hour.
It was really nice to be here. And the cell phone folks were cooperative, which was really good.
Cell phones have progressed, haven't they? Thanks again, Temple Grandin. She is the subject of the movie Temple Grandin, the Emmy Award-winning HBO movie. It's the true story of her life with autism. And good luck at the chicken farm today, Temple.
Well, I'm just walking alongside the chicken farm now and get ready to join up with the rest of the group. And I just lost one of my plastic booties, and I've got to go back and get it.
Okay. Take care, and thanks again. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.